And of course, more open lines just ahead. Some of you have been on hold for over an hour. I'll get to you when we get right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Open Lines on Coast to Coast. Let's go right to the phones now. Jeff in Columbia, Missouri. Jeffrey, thanks for holding so long.
Oh, hey, how's it going?
Okay, how about you?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm just sitting on the back porch. Weather's nice.
Oh, it's gorgeous out here. I'm in St. Louis right now. It's been...
Yeah, same deal.
Great couple days. What's going on?
I tell you, all the last callers... trying to keep my train of thought going on. I caught this show earlier. Also, this is the first time I've ever called in to Coast on Coast, by the way.
Oh, great.
And I'm a huge Art Bell fan. I think that guy deserves an award. That's my cat. Going back to your guest, have you ever, do you know who Robert Anton Wilson is?
What's his last name?
Robert Anton Wilson.
I do not. Who tell us about him?
Well, he's an author. He was friends with like Tim Leary.
Okay.
He's written a lot of books, and if you haven't read them, I suggest that you do. He's one of my favorite authors. He was a futurist. He has an honorary degree in physics. I mean, like the guy, he died about 10 years ago. But yeah, at any rate, what I wanted to say about like your previous guest, what you guys were talking about, and I caught the show a little bit late, but what he says, you know, I mean, like, you know, the human mind and our perception capabilities, you know, are finite, you know. So if you experience something that is something that you've never can't comprehend it, your brain obviously, your brain will try to put it into a box.
It compensates for it.
Yeah. And that's like, you know, when you have mass people seeing the Virgin Mary.
Mm-hmm.
Are you
saying that's not happening and it's just being created by the mind?
What he posits is it's like, you know, maybe it could be anything. It could be, you know, like say that time travel is possible. You know, let's just go there.
All right.
And like somebody's coming back from the future, and we're unable to comprehend that. So what we see, we try to, you know, fit it into our lexicon. And we put it in, you know, the framework of everything that we know and we perceive. And so you have to put it in something. And so that's a gray alien.
Interesting. You know? I think that's possible in some cases. But I do believe in miracles and all these other strange things that they could be happening too.
Oh, I'm not discounting that at all. I'm just saying that I'm not trying to put everything into the same box.
Right.
I'll look up this guy's work,
but you're saying he's dead?
Yeah, he died. He died a while ago. He worked for Playboy for a little bit.
Okay.
In the early 70s, I think he was responsible for doing the question and answer, like, preview in Playboy magazine or whatever. I don't know. Somebody at Playboy asked him if he could write an entire novel about boobs, and he did.
Well, not many people could. Tom, text and tweets. What do you have?
This one from Martin in Columbus, Ohio. I'm so sorry we lost Stanton Friedman. It seems like we're losing all our good ufologists.
Well, we are.
I was going to say, who do you feel are the upcomers, if there are any?
Well, Dolan, Richard Dolan, of course, is a great one. John Greenwald is a great one. There are some good, dedicated ufologists out there. But, you know, Stanton Friedman, John Mack, Bud Hopkins, these people were the creme de la creme. They were the home runs.
Yeah, I think he's hitting it on the head here because I don't think there are a lot of upcomers like these guys. I mean, they were the cream of the crop. We do.
We need more. Okay. Thanks, Tom. Let's go to Doug in New Jersey. Welcome to the show. Hey, Douglas.
Good evening. How's everything with you?
Okay, sir. How about you?
I'm doing fine. Thanks for asking. Okay. I was trying to get on earlier when your guest was on, but since then you had mentioned about Car Ridge, too, so you get two for the price of one here.
Perfect. A deal.
Back in 2000, my ex and I, we had purchased some property up in Pennsylvania. It was a small two-lot acre, came complete with a trailer and a small shed, lawnmower, 12-foot aluminum boat, a couple of bicycles and whatnot. We were anxious to get the place all cleaned up and whatnot. We had gone up there and we began doing that very first spring. Met a young man of the age of 16 or 17 who was two campsites over. His parents have been there for 20-some-odd years. And said, if you need help, I'll give you a hand cleaning this up. I said, that'd be great. I said, let's going to grab this boat and move it over. And he says, boy, he says, I'd kill for a boat like this. He said, but I'm trying to get one, for the local lake here, for the campground. And I said, I'll tell you what. I says, you give me a hand, and when we're done, it's yours. I says, I've got a 16-footer back in Jersey that I'm going to be bringing up here. He was proud to do it. He said, go fantastic.
Well, good for you.
He did a great job, cleaning up the bushes and all of that sort of thing. He went ahead. I gave him the boat inside of it. There was a set of oars, a life jacket, an anchor, and a dilapidated, falling apart old fishing net. That was part of the whole deal. Take it all, So 2 weeks had passed. We had finally got a chance to go back up there on the weekend. To the cabin again. So, like I said, right after purchasing it. And the fellow from next door, he came over and I asked him, I says, have you gotten a chance to fish yet? He said, I got the boat down there now. He says, what's going on with that? I says, what do you mean? He says, with those oars. I says, I don't understand. He says, the oars, they jump around. I said, they jump around. He says, like a couple of fish. He says, if I lay them in the bottom of the boat, he says, once I anchor up, he said, they started flapping around. He says, and then he says, really? I didn't know what the hell happened. He says, and then a week later, or the next following weekend, I got a chance to take them out again. He said, and this time when I was rowing back to shore, he said, every time I would pull them out of the water, I would feel like I was getting an electrical shock in either hand.
Huh.
He said, I wound up getting rid of them, and now I got a kayak paddle that I use. And I said, have you had any problems with that? He says, no, none at all. So I don't know what went on between those oars and,
Did you ever use those oars yourself?
Like I said, the boat came with the property, and I had my own boat that I had brought
up. So you never went out and used it?
Right. It was more or less there on the property taking up space, and I was glad to,
That's strange. What would cause that?
I have no idea. No idea whatsoever. That's what I was trying to get through, hoping that your guest would be able to tell me if that was a poltergeist type thing or a haunting or something.
I wonder if somebody drowned in that boat, fell out or something.
Once the paddles were gone, that was it. He said he had no more problems, but those two incidents alone were enough to make me, say, wow,
That's strange. Did you believe him?
Oh, absolutely. He was, like I said, he went out, he says, and I had to go out and buy a kayak paddle, he says, that I use now. He says, I took him out, and he even asked me, would you like him back? I said, no, I don't have no use for him. I said, I have no use for him. I've got paddles with my boat and an electric motor. I said, so you can go ahead and use them for firewood if you want.
Yeah. That is strange indeed. Let's go to Jim in Newark, Delaware. Welcome to the program. Hi, Jim.
Hey, George, long time no talk.
Long time on hold, too, so thanks for hanging in there.
Hey, first of all, have you ever had David Horowitz on?
David Horowitz, I believe, was on years ago.
No, he actually got a book about persecution of Christians in America called Dark Agenda.
Okay.
I thought you were going to have him on for that book.
I'll check into that again.
Hey, but listen, I have an internet radio station, and this is a strange thing that's happening now.
What's going on?
You could check in real time to see the location and the browser the listeners are using, right? A list of them. Well, for about 10 or 12 days, this one listener from the Russian Federation never goes to sleep. They're on there constantly for 10 or 12 days. I figure it's a Russian bot.
It could be, or they have people taking each other's places. Yeah.
Yeah. That's weird. Maybe I'll go to the Zendesk or the people that run the website. And I'm going to talk to them about it and see what they think.
What are they listening to, our show?
Oh, no. It's my internet radio station, and it's decidedly Christian rock and roll.
I see. All right. Yeah, what I would guess, Jim, is they've probably got other people revolving around that and taking turns and taking places. Next up, we've got Esteban in San Antonio, Texas. Hello there.
Hello there. I got a story of strange historical circumstances that I happen to be involved in.
Let's hear it.
My dad was conceived in DP Camp Orsberg of two Latvian parents to avoid repatriation. And my grandfather, his father, wound up dying across the street from an Operation Paperclip scientist who lived in New Braunfels, Texas, and worked at Kelly. My grandmother had Alzheimer's. Before Alzheimer's took her head, she gave my mother rather specific instructions that my sister and I were going to experience her life. So we drive up to New York after she passes away, stopping in Wilmington, Delaware, fly to Europe, and we put her ashes in the Baltic Sea. Well, twice in my life, under mysterious circumstances, on trips I wind up in the same kind of airplanes, if not the same airplanes, that carried my grandmother's remains. The first time, within a year, my dad represented the United States in competition against the Soviet Union in September of 1989. He overflew where his half-brother had been a POW by the Allies. My Uncle Gens was in the Latvian Legion. And we know a certain wall came crashing down 90 days later.
It did.
Yeah. And the second time, Canberra was flogged in. I was actually going to visit that brother of his. Wind up in the same kind of airplane that carried my grandma's ashes and me, the last leg. Come back home, and my mom announced that she is going to be the assistant superintendent of schools in town where she met my father. This is August of 91, and we know that Latvia became free August 21st of 91. So I talked to one of your guess about World War II ghosts. He said that was kind of strange. And I flippantly joked about living in one of the most haunted dorms and not seeing a ghost. I told a cross-country teammate of mine, I said, perhaps they were having mercy on me. Because being an Army brat, both those circumstances were not quite too pleasant because I was used to fishing with my dad, and he was at Fort Rucker for 3 months. And the story gets even stranger because we were on the Redneck Riviera when the Warsaw Pact had their meeting to dissolve. And we're on the Redneck Riviera, December 25th, 1991, when the Soviet Union ceased to be.
What do you think all this means?
I don't know. It's just, and there's, you know.
No coincidences. So
well,
what is this?
And Operation Paperclip scientist and his wife blew their brains out when we returned to New Braunfels. It was a double suicide. It was like a real-life Saturday Night Live skit. My mom wasn't paying too much attention to the China War and Civil War that she picked up. It's got swastikas on it.
Yeah, you sound like you picked up a lot of ghostly things that were attached. That happens. Let's go to Tom in the Bronx. Oh, he's not ready yet. Let's go to Louise in Kentucky. Hi, Louise.
Hello, George. Thank you for accepting my call. I'm calling regarding Cleopatra, as always. On August the 1st, Octavian invaded Alexandria, and he started a new dating cycle. So we know why this is the year 2019, because he started August the 1st as his new year, and Cleopatra died on August the 10th.
It's coming up, isn't it? That anniversary.
Well, it's
now, what's going to happen, since you believe you're the reincarnated Cleopatra?
Yes.
What's going to happen on that day? Well, be careful.
But I am still concerned about Cleopatra because I can't remember what happened and how she died. But I would also like to tell you about the day she was banned from the palace by her younger brother, Ptolemy the 13th, if I may.
Why was she banned from the palace?
Her brother was, when Cleopatra was made queen, she was 18. Her brother was 10. Her brother wanted to be the king, but the father, Ptolemy the 12th, said Cleopatra would be the queen and her younger brother would be her assistant or whatever. Cleopatra brushed him aside. He and his three advisors banned Cleopatra from the palace one day when she went to pray to the temple of Isis. And when she came back to the palace, the guards would not let her in. And she said, "What do you mean? I can't go in." And they said, "We have been given instructions to keep you out of the palace." Well, she looked around. She had six bodyguards that were always with her. And they were standing there, and they looked around, too, and they saw what was happening. They went and got horses, and they said, "Come on, queen, let's go." They put Cleopatra on the horse. These six men and Cleopatra rode out of Alexandria, and she lived in the desert for a year, getting an army, and she said to her brother, "I will be back."
But how do you know all this stuff?
George, I told you I remember everything, but it's also in Stacy Schiff's book, Chapter 2.
Interesting. Louise claims to be the reincarnated Cleopatra. She's got stories that nobody knows about, so who knows? Tom in the Bronx, take it away, Thomas.
Hi, George. I'd like to say that I've got a road story for you.
A road story. Go for it.
Back, there was a movie that was on TV with Dennis Weaver, the guy that used to play Chester on.
Yeah, he's a good actor, then.
Yeah, but anyway, in this movie, he was a cop chasing this big truck, and the criminals were in the truck. And to stop him from chasing him, they took a big tire and they threw it off the truck. It came down on the ground and bounced up. Well, the next day I was going to work and I used to drive to work. So I was on the Bronx River Parkway headed south to Manhattan. And there was a big truck in front of me, believe
me. Oh, boy. Here we go.
And there was a, on the truck, was a big tire that was badly put on the truck. Well, it came off the truck, hit the ground about, I don't know how many feet, 8 feet down.
And then bounced right at you.
It was sailing up into the sky, and I kept going. The truck kept going, and I kept going. And I looked through the rearview mirror, and it came down on the highway.
Wow. Did it hit anybody?
No. Fortunately, believe it or not, no, but it was a impediment to driving. I met to other people.
Oh, I guess so, especially when you... I'm always very leery getting behind a car or a truck that has things hanging out the window or the trunk or anything, because you always think if they stop too soon, that stuff could come sliding towards you and chop off your head, for crying out loud. You got to be careful with that. We're going to come back in a moment. Benjamin Krem, the late Benjamin Krem, who claims that he knew the Maitreya that many thought was the Antichrist. Stay tuned. The Maitreya, the master of the universe, ahead of the perfected beings. Some time ago, I had a chance to talk with his representative, the late Benjamin Krem. Benjamin Krem, a British artist, longtime student of the Ageless Wisdom teachings, has become the principal source of information about the emergence of the Maitreya, what he calls the world teacher. In 1959, Mr. Krem received his first telepathic message from a wisdom master.
Not long after, he was informed that Maitreya would return within 20 years and that he would be given the opportunity to play an active role in the event he so chose. Mr. Krem has written 10 books, gives lectures, and has been on this program numerous times. Here he is, Benjamin Krem. Back. It's been a while, Benjamin. How are you?
Yes, indeed. Yes, I'm fine. Thank you.
Still speaking around the world?
I am indeed, yes.
Cool. For people who don't know who the Maitreya is, would you describe him? And then, of course, you do know he's controversial, so I'll ask you for a few of those.
Maitreya is the personal name of the head and leader of a group of, from our point of view, totally perfected beings, the masters of wisdom. A group of men, men like us, who have gone ahead of us in evolution and evolved to a point where they no longer need to be on this planet. But a large number of them remain on the planet to oversee the plan of evolution for the rest of us. The head and leader of that group is the Lord Maitreya, and he holds the office of world teacher and is expected by all the major religions under one name or another. Christians await the return of the Christ. Maitreya embodies what we call the Christ principle, the energy of love. He's awaited by Muslims as the Imam Mahdi. Several of them, the Shiite groups, believe that he is either in the world or expected to be in the world within the next 3 or so years. Hindus await the coming of Krishna.
Yeah.
Buddhists await the coming of Maitreya Buddha. They have his name right. 2,600 years ago, the Buddha made a prophecy that at this time would come into the world a new teacher, a Buddha like himself, by name Maitreya, who by dint of his extraordinary spiritual stature would galvanize and inspire humanity into the making of a brilliant golden civilization based, as he put it, on righteousness and truth. And this is, I believe, the Maitreya Buddha that is expected by Buddhists. Although I know Japan very well, I go there every year, and the Buddhists in Japan expect Maitreya Buddha, but they see him coming in something like 650 million years from now. Well, to my mind, they've got it totally wrong. Maitreya is in the world, came into the everyday world from the Himalayas, where he has lived for thousands and thousands of years, and took up his position in the Asian community of London on the 19th of July, 1977, has now reached a point where he can come openly into the world, and we expect this to take place very, very soon.
How soon, Benjamin?
Very soon. I can't give you a date. It might be tomorrow, a week's time, 3 weeks from now, 2 months, any time in the immediate future.
I mean, I know when we talked 4 years ago, it's been a long time, 4 years ago, you know, the word of the Maitreya was starting to get out. Is he well known in Europe?
I don't think he's more well known in Europe than in America. Okay. I've had more media coverage in America than anywhere else in the world. So I would think the people in America are probably more informed about Maitreya than anyone. Although the Japanese, although I don't get, because of the language problem, I don't get the same media coverage, the Japanese are tremendously involved. If I hold a lecture in Tokyo, well, I was there in May this year, there are 2,000 people at a lecture.
Well, that's a lot of people.
Yeah.
Now, I've got to ask you this, Benjamin, while we chat this hour, and I may keep you for phone calls for an hour after that. There are a lot of people who do study the Maitreya. They truly believe that he, it, whatever you want to call this, is the Antichrist.
Yeah.
And I know you don't get offended when you get those questions asked.
No,
I mean,
you're
going to get a lot of those tonight, but I do need you to address that. People believe he's the Antichrist.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, people are completely wrong because they don't know what the Antichrist is. The usual idea of the Antichrist is that there will be some kind of a man who will appear before the Christ, and this is the expectation of Christians that the Christ will return, although they don't know when or the manner. And they posit the idea that before he comes, will come into the world a man who could be mistaken for the Christ, but he is in fact evil incarnate. He is the devil. He is all the worst possible evil they can imagine. It's their own fears that they project onto Maitreya. The Antichrist is something completely different from that. It's not a man. It is an energy deliberately released into the world to break down the old order. It's in Revelations of St. John, as you probably know.
Yes.
It refers to the release of the Antichrist through the Emperor Nero, who, so that the Roman dispensation could be finished and destroyed to prepare the way for Christendom. It was released again in our time through Hitler, a group around Hitler in Nazi Germany, together with a group around Mussolini in Italy, and a further group of militarists in Japan. And these three forces, the Nazis, the fascists in Italy, and the Japanese militarists, embodied the energy we call the Antichrist. It has been and gone, it has done its destructive work, and prepared the way for the coming of the Christ today. Maitreya, as far as Christians are concerned, is the Christ. And they await him without knowing that he's called Maitreya. They are looking for Jesus Christ. Well, Jesus is a disciple of Maitreya. And 2,000 years ago, Maitreya used the vehicle, the body of the disciple Jesus, to manifest for 3 years, from the baptism to the crucifixion. Jesus made two enormous sacrifices. One was the giving up of his body for the use of Maitreya for these 3 years, and the other to be literally crucified on the cross, which is a symbolic enactment of a great initiation, which in the West is called the crucifixion. In the East, it's known as the Great Renunciation, in which all is renounced, even death, life itself, for the higher life of the resurrected masters.
With this return, Benjamin, of the Maitreya that could come at any time, why? Why now?
He comes now at this particular time because the masters as a group, quite apart from humanity, have come to an end of a cycle in their evolution which requires them to return to the everyday world where once they lived as ordinary men and women in the world, to show their ability to work on all planes. They have consciousness on all planes on Earth, but to show their ability to work consciously and with control on all planes in group formation. They have done this individually, but they must show their ability to do it in group formation. As their teacher, as their leader, Maitreya comes as one of them. That's the reason for coming at this moment. The other reason is that humanity is going through a tremendous cosmic event. The change from one cosmic cycle to another.
A huge change
from the Piscean experience into the Aquarius experience, and this goes on over years and years and years. The energies of Pisces began to recede in 1625. The energies of Aquarius began to come in 1675, and by now they're more or less equal. Not quite, but very near. And the world is divided into two lots of people. Those, not because they're evil, but because they love them, who are holding on to the old ways, of Pisces, the greedy, selfish, self-interested, ways of Pisces, and all the structures, political, economic, religious, social, scientific, educational, and so on, are all created under the aegis of the energies of Pisces. But we are now in the early stages of the age of Aquarius.
The
new energies are coming in and are quite different from those of Pisces.
But, you know, Benjamin, with this entire world upside down right now, it is ironic that the Maitreya would arise at the same time.
No, I think it's very pertinent that just at such a time he does come to show us how to handle the situation, how to safely move from the experience of Pisces into the experience of Aquarius. The energies of Pisces have given us tremendous things like individuality, a sense of idealism, devotion to an ideal. But that ideal, because of the marked individuality at the same time, has always been our own ideal. Whatever had to do with ourselves, our family, our group, our nation, our country is right. Right, whatever it does no wrong, and we do no wrong. So we have built in a kind of one-sided view of life, a fundamentalist view of life, and left ourselves no longer open to other points of view. And it takes all points of view to make a world. We're not all thinking the same things, and we're not all at the same point in evolution. And so the world is really an aggregate of ideas and forces, and that has to be given expression. Whereas holding on to one dogmatic viewpoint, whether that be religious, you know, Christian or Buddhist or Muslim or Hindu or Jewish or whatever, is not of benefit to humanity. Neither is holding on to an ideological idea like socialism or communism or democracy or fascism or Nazism. These are mental ideas, and they only confuse. They block the view of life in reality to humanity. So we are all working through a fog of glamour. We don't see life as it really is. And that glamour has to be removed. The masters are people who have in themselves removed all hint of glamour from their emotional makeup, all hint of illusion from their mental makeup, and are perfected. And they are there to show us how to do the same thing, how to become like them, perfect. And in the immediate future, the work of hierarchy is to show us how to safely move out of the restraints and exaggerations of Pisces into the unity of Aquarius. The energies of Aquarius are about oneness.
I understand now.
Unity. But with total diversity, so that they are a unity in diversity, the utmost diversity, the utmost individuality, but all brought together and put at the service of unity.
Are you still in telepathic communication with the Maitreya?
Not with Maitreya, no, but with my own master.
You are? Yeah. Okay. Okay. How about Maitreya? Are you in contact with him at all?
I'm in contact with him, yes, but not in a sort of like phoning up sort of way, you know?
I mean, he's...
He overshadows me at all my meetings. He directs the energies through me in our meditation, transmission meditation, which our master has introduced to the world. But I can't ring up Maitreya. I can call on him at any time, but I can't sort of ring him up and say, look, could you do this or that?
Does he have the ability to manifest himself wherever he wants to go?
Yeah, wherever. Anywhere in the world at any moment. He is omniscient. He has full consciousness.
never knew I had Martians in my garden. And I never knew there were aliens on my roof. I got shadow people, and they're living in my basement. Got a funny feeling Bigfoot's gonna be here soon. I was so blind before, I was so unaware. But now I swear I'm seeing Sasquatch over there. And I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. Now I can see the light, and I also see a ghost. 'Cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Well, you never knew that your baby was a hybrid. But as he grew, you began to see the clues. Now you know the signs, 'cause you learned it from George Norrie. Even while you sleep, you got Martians watching you. I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. And I can see the light, and I also see a ghost. 'Cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Good morning or good evening, wherever you may be, whichever world you're living in, whatever century. Your voice is always welcome here on my radio. Call in with your space transmitter or your telephone. And I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. Now I can see the light, and I also see a ghost. 'Cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast.
For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, Greg Bishop, Tim Banal, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.